you can't, it's hard to get away in at least in a traditional radio documentary without a narrator, without a host of some sort.
I'm Tom Hoos from Earlton, New York, and I'm listening to WGXC Acra, New York.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network in sport.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And we've got all sorts of sounds and stories for you today. In the second hour, we will speak live with Brad Monkel, the organizer of the Greenville Summer Concert Series that starts Tuesday night in the Greenville Town Park. Brad also hosts a show on WGXC, and we'll talk about both on the radio this morning. We'll also hear from Senator Kirsten Gillibrand in Albany and about election news in Rensselaer County and the lack of ethics reform in Albany, plus the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. All this and more after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
The blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood.
Show on WGXC.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Chocolate pig.
I turned it down.
Only dogs can hear. Did you hear that?
No.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Art Omai in Kent, New York. Open daily from dawn until dusk. Art Omai Sculpture and Architecture Park presents the work of contemporary artists and architects across 120 acres of field and forest. Now accepting advance registrations for visits on weekends and select holidays. Information at artomai.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Elizabeth Powell Leather Items of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You've tuned into the WGXC local news. I'm Tom Rowe in Acre. You can go to WGXC.org and click on the WGXC newsroom for more information about any of these stories. Natasha Vaughn is reporting for Columbia Green Media that it has been 1 year since a Kinderhook Independence Day party turned violent, but still no trial date has yet been set for those who stand accused of the alleged assault of Harold J. Handy III. Case has resulted in rallies, a countywide campaign for justice on Handy's behalf, and a host of comments on social media. Handy was allegedly assaulted during a holiday party at the home of Alex Rosenstrock, the former owner of Club Life Gym in Valencia, and Columbia County Sheriff Deputy Kelly Briscoe Rosenstrock. The following October, four people were indicted: Kelly and Alex Rosenstock, Brian Hogg of Kinderhook, and Corey Gaylord of Craryville. The 25-count indictment included multiple felony charges against each defendant. Columbia County District Attorney Paul Chaika and Defense Attorney William D. Roberts have both said there are no recent developments in the case. According to both, COVID has played a role in the case's timeline. Quote, it's the same reason there haven't been any trial dates for anything, any indictments, except the very oldest, Chaika said. Quote, because of the pandemic, everything has been shut down, unquote. Courts are beginning to reopen, scheduling dates for older matters, the DA said. But the trials now getting scheduled precede the Handy case by a substantial amount of time. Quote, this is a problem that is not unique to Columbia County, unquote, Chaika said. Quote, it's a problem throughout the state and presumably the country, unquote. Chaika noted the amount of time that passed between the incident in July to October when the indictments were handed up was a different matter, but he declined to say more. During that time, the case drew scrutiny as people questioned jurisdiction and how the county sheriff could ethically investigate the incident given the Rosenstock's ties to area law enforcement. Roberts noted that it is not uncommon for a felony matter to take more than a year to reach trial. Many residents have spoken up in the past year in support of Handy, who owns Handy Repairs, an auto repair business. Quote, I have enough hope in our justice system to believe after a three-month investigation, a grand jury, and months of defense attorney motions that the indictments are accurate pertaining to this case, unquote, Handy said last week. The court will soon hear motions and determine if the state's case is legally sufficient. Kelly Rosenstock, who was suspended from the sheriff's office, is still employed there. But Roberts claims to not know if she is a paid employee or not. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Alila Schneider is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Hudson 3rd Ward Alderperson Calvin Lewis Jr. resigned July 1st to avoid a conflict of interest following his appointment to the position of Assistant Director of the City Youth Department. Lewis began working for the city on June 21st. Director Liz York said, Mayor Kamal Johnson confirmed Lewis's resignation July 2nd. Quote, I'm happy for him in his new position, unquote, Johnson said. Quote, I think it's a huge loss for the council, and he has done a lot of amazing work for his constituents, unquote. The vacancy Lewis leaves on the Common Council will have to be filled before the end of the year. Johnson said the council will call a special meeting to discuss its next step. Common Council President Thomas DiPietro said Lewis's intention was always to do the right thing. Quote, he has served honorably on the council, especially leading the tourism board through a tumultuous time. The council's loss is the youth center's gain, unquote. Lewis is now the former chair of the tourism board. Note, Johnson and DiPietro are volunteer WGXC programmers. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And the Daily Freeman is reporting that Ulster County will allocate $80,000 through a partnership with Family of Woodstock to administer housing vouchers for local hotel stays for people entering or leaving substance abuse treatment, according to County Executive Pat Ryan. The housing vouchers are intended to help anyone successfully entering treatment or returning to the community after successfully completing treatment, Ryan's office said. Residents will be allowed up to 2 weeks of respite housing. Ryan said the program is needed for people struggling with addiction while the county continues to invest in building long-term housing capacity. He said, quote, we are proud to partner with Family of Woodstock to make sure that residents have a roof over their heads as they prepare for their next steps of recovery treatment, unquote. Ulster County's high-risk mitigation team is a collaboration between the county sheriff's Oracle program, Samadhi, Catholic Charities, People USA, Ellenville Regional Hospital, and the County Health and Mental Health Department. The Behavioral Health Task Force has identified a lack of respite housing in Ulster County for people who are ready to enter treatment but need a safe place to stay for a few days while they wait for their placement. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Are you an artist or organization looking to make a website but aren't sure where to start? Create Council on the Arts is pleased to present the workshop Website Toolkit, Do-It-Yourself Skills for Sharing Your Creative Work Online, led by artists Katie Ford and River Kramer. The workshop will be held virtually on Thursday, July 8th, starting at 4 p.m. This workshop is part of CREATE's monthly professional development workshops for artists and organizations covering topics like video production, career development, grant writing, and outreach. CREATE Council on the Arts serves Greene, Columbia, and Schoharie counties with grant programs,
workshops, exhibitions, and more. Information at createcouncil.org or info@createcouncil.org.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts there's a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms also possible after 2 p.m. on Sunday. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high near 70 and a low around 55. Monday should be mostly sunny with a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. and a high near 79 with a low around 65. Tuesday, 50% chance of rain, mostly in the afternoon after 11 a.m. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 88 and a low around 65. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Phoenix Grace of Del Mar, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Support for
United Airlines. United provides
support for NPR.
In cities like Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C.
Underwriting today is provided
United Airlines,
by
Borders, Books, and Music,
Jutus, Juice Bar Blend, and by Whitney Farms, producers of a complete line of
public
radio.com.
United provides just another way. National Business Radio is rising. National Public Radio.
National
Business Radio
comes from
United Airlines,
Borders, Books, and Music.
Jutus, Juice Bar Blend.
United provides just another way. National Business Radio is rising.
Public Radio.
National Public Radio. Nonstop Business
Radio. .com.
Public
Radio.
Nonstop Business.
Underwriting today is provided by Inktomi. That's Inktomi scaling.
National Public Radio.
INKTOMI.com.
National Public Radio.
National Public Radio.
Nonstop Business
Radio.com.
Public Radio. National Public Radio. Nonstop Business
Radio. Should be tips,
public.
Soil amendments and mulches.com.
National Public Radio. Radio.
Public.
Radio. National Public Radio. Nonstop Business
Radio.com.
Public Radio.
Well, lots of pretty good news there. Thanks, Joe. That report brought to you by
NationalBusinessRadio.com.
Friday night and everyone's cool. Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acra, Catskill, Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Tracy. I'm the program director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
My name is Georgia. I'm 10. I'm going to fifth grade, and I am from near Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm 19, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
You say it.
Bookish things.
And that's what we're going to do today. Happy last week of school for you, Georgia. Is it your last week?
Nope. My last day was June 4th, and this is my first week of camp.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Thanks. Nice. I got out really early. We did a pod, so our teacher was just really nice and let us out really early.
Oh, nice.
I have one of the best teachers ever. Well, had when I'm going to school. But I love my teacher.
Amelia, you're already back in school for the summer, right?
Yeah, I'm college.
Are you attending summer school on purpose?
Yeah, I wanted to get done early.
You are? Why would you?
Because I want to get done early.
Wouldn't you rather go on vacation or go to camp or?
I had a bit of vacation. I didn't. And there's no camps for people like. Yeah.
Georgia, I'm glad you're here today. I wanted to tell you. Have you heard that there's a new volume of the OK Witch coming out next week?
OK Witch. What? Yeah. What's it called?
The OK Witch and the Hungry Shadow comes out July 6th.
Thank you. And then also a new book in the Cable Miller series is coming out soon.
Also at the end of the summer. Don't you like the Friends series?
Yes, and at the end of the summer, Friends Forever is coming out. There are so many graphic novel sequels coming out this summer. Shh.
It's true.
Sorry.
I knew you'd be excited. Are there any releases you're excited about, Amelia? That you have?
Not really. I'm kind of working my way through the manga I still have. I finished one of them a couple weeks ago, actually.
A series?
Kind of. Have I talked about Junji Ito with you here before?
I think so. That's like the horror one?
Yeah, he's really, really well known for making horror manga. And I finished one of his like big volumes. And the volumes of his work are basically a bunch of short stories that aren't connected really. You just kind of jump in and read them at your own pace. And I love them a lot for that.
Oh, that's
but,
cool.
Yeah.
It's a good summer read. You can pick it up and put it down.
They're a lot of fun.
Let's check that out. What's the new one you're getting ready to start?
I think it might be called Fragments. The one I just finished was called Smashed.
Sounds violent.
Junji Ito's work kind of spans from Goosebumps levels of horror to really intense levels of horror, and you never know what a story is gonna be, which kind of puts you on edge. And I don't know if that's the purpose of that or if he just does a bit better with some stories than he does with others, but you can be reading one that has a very Goosebumps like plot and then the next one will just like keep you up at night.
What?
Oh my gosh.
I just haven't seen it.
Yeah, I don't know if any of you remember when there was like a TV show on Netflix called R.L. Stein's Haunting Hour, but it's kind of like that in that some episodes of R.L. Stein's Haunting Hour would be very Goosebumps-like, very silly, very child horror, and then there would be other episodes that still freak me out to this day with no warning in between them, no reason. I don't know who this show was meant for, and I don't really know who Junji Ito was meant for either, but... I like it a lot.
That's so scary, not knowing what you're gonna get.
It is. It kind of puts you on edge. At least with his single stories, he's best known, I think, for either Gyo or Uzumaki, and you know what you're getting with those two. Dio freaked me out a whole lot. It was the first thing of his that I ever read. And you know what you're getting with those, but in the short story collections, you don't really know what each one is going to be about.
Georgia, do you read any dark, scary horror type stuff?
Oh, I guess this PG-rated kind of drama on Netflix, Amy. It's a series.
What's it called?
Greenhouse Academy. I'd recommend it for ages 10 and up.
What's that about?
I give away. If I say something, I'm going to pretty much spoil the whole thing. It's the kind of thing, if you describe it, you spoil the thing.
Okay.
But I've only watched the first two seasons. And there are four seasons in total. Have you heard of Greenhouse Academy?
I've never heard of it, no.
Lee, have you?
I haven't heard of it, no.
It's good. It's good, but probably shouldn't watch it on night when you need to catch up on sleep. I mean, it doesn't give me nightmares, just every once in a while. Like, it just hits me a little bit. But that's all good. So, may I please share my book?
Please do.
So, my book is called Dun 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 Dun. Dun 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 dun. White Bird by RJ Palacio. The same author who wrote Wonder. I really love this because the art is very beautiful and the story is just amazing.
What do you like about it? Besides the art, I mean.
The story is really beautiful. So amazing. This is probably my favorite art in the whole book. This is my favorite little one.
Maybe you could describe it for our listeners.
Drew that. It's so beautiful. So I will read the description. To the millions of readers who fell in love with R.J. Palacio's Wonder, Julian is best known as Augie Bullman's classroom bully. White Bird reveals a new side to Julian's story as he discovers the moving and powerful tale of his grandmother, who was hidden from the Nazis as a young Jewish girl in occupied France during World War II. As Grandmere tells Julian, it always takes courage to be kind, but in those days, such kindness could cost you everything. Includes an afterword by award-winning author and book critic Ruth Franklin. And then here's a little clip. My name is Julian Boumier. Julian. And that is the name of all the names in the world that I've held closest to my heart since then. The name I gave to your father. It's the name he gave to you. Julian.
Maybe you could describe
this
the art
style. This
is one
of my favorites. It's a very realistic, it's on the realistic a lot of comics. Air to see or bubbly or in some certain way, but this is very detailed and realistic. This is definitely a graphic novel and not a comic. There's nothing funny in here at all. Mostly sad. I'd recommend this book for ages 10 and up because there's some scenes with pictures, blood spilling out of people's bodies. So yeah.
So you do read gory things sometimes.
Boring?
Gory.
Oh, yeah, this is like a little gory. Like, so ages 10 and up. If you're 8, if you're 7 or under, or maybe even 8 or under, refrain from reading this. Because soon after that, you will be scared of everything.
Amelia, did you have a book you wanted to share?
I pretty much read the Junji stuff, but I want to build off what Georgia said. Oh. I love it when gothic novels tackle more like serious topics. For one, I have the comic, but I haven't read it yet. It's called Mouse by Art Spiegelman, which was I think it was serialized originally, but the version I have, I'm pretty sure it's all the issues in one book. It was like. It was published in 1980 to 1991, according to this article that I'm currently reading. And it talks about Spiegelman interviewing his father about his experiences as a Polish Jew and Holocaust survivor. But it uses a lot of animal imagery. It presents the Jews as mice, the Germans as cats, the Polish are shown as pigs. They use a lot of animal imagery that makes it very interesting to read and analyze. And I really have to read it at some point because it's a very, very pretty and very, very hard to read by the looks of it comic, but it looks like it would be very interesting and rewarding to get through.
I really love that series. You're gonna like it. Why do you think that he chose to make all the characters animals?
I'm honestly not sure. I lack the insight to say that. I have no idea. I think it is a very unique and like eye-catching thing that he did, though. At one point, I believe Emily once talked about another graphic novel called Persepolis that also deals with some more serious topics, but I do not remember the plot of that one because I have never read it.
I also love that book. It's actually another two-part comic by Marjane Satrapi, and it's about growing up in Iran, and I think she moves to America to be an artist, and so then she has to grapple with the duality of her identity and struggling to find peers who relate to her experiences during wartime. It's really good, and Marjane Satrapi has written a lot of really good books. If you like it, it's great because you can continue.
That's really interesting. It's really cool.
There's also a good movie for Persepolis. It's an animated film, which I like.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. I didn't know that they made an animated movie out of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's one comic that I really love that was supposed to get a show, and then it never did, I found out. I actually found out it was supposed to get a show, and then immediately afterwards found out it did not get a show. And I've never been sadder in my life. Called Nimona. It's one of my favorite comics ever. I'm obsessed with Nimona.
Wait, they were going to make an animated series?
Disney was going to make an animated series of Nimona, and then they canceled it.
Why?
Because they thought some of the content in it would get it banned in places like Russia and China, and all Disney really cares about is money. It's the sad truth. I really like some of their movies, but they really only care about making money. Even though honestly they own the world at this point, I think they could deal with maybe not showing their shows in China or Russia, but whatever, I guess.
For Nimona fans everywhere, come on.
I would have loved it, but honestly, maybe it's better because I would have loved it the way it was, but if they had made it, I'm very scared that they probably would have censored stuff that would have made me very unhappy about the stuff they had taken out. I would have been very unhappy if they had taken out some of the stuff in that book. Because I love that comic so much. I'm trying to look on the bright side that maybe it's better that we did not get a show at all rather than a show that completely butchered the plot.
True. Take your time. If you're going to do it well.
Yeah.
After the radio show where you told me that was one of your favorite comics, I reread it. And it is so funny. I forgot about how funny it was. I just kept laughing out loud while I was reading it.
It's hilarious and it's so sweet because you can tell that it started out as a webcomic, and as you keep reading it, you can like see how the artist's style like evolved. Like taking the first very simple like panels to seeing like the ending battle and how intricate the art becomes. It's gorgeous. I love it.
I like in the back of the book too how they show you how the illustrator drew Nimona in the beginning and how the character evolved. Do you remember
that? Yeah, I loved that. I loved the concept art. I loved how her hair changed so much. It was so cute because that was like probably one of the first female characters I had seen in a book that had hair like that. And it made, and it like, I'm that's probably one of the factors that made me cut off all my hair. Because I used to have very, very long hair, like long enough that when I did cut it off, I could donate it to make wigs. So, and that's what I did. I donated in my hair to make wigs.
I have a question.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah?
Is Nimona appropriate for...
Yes, it is.
You haven't read it, Georgia?
You haven't read it? It's good. It's perfect. It's good for
it's
everyone. I love
favorite
it.
Comic.
Yeah, it's.
And I'm good. Start reading it. What's it about again?
Give me a second to find it because I have it in my book room, which is like just a couple feet away. I'll be right back.
Okay. You have a whole room of books? Lucky. I have a whole bookcase of books, but she has a rip.
I'm back. And yes, I do have a whole room of books. It used to be called the computer room. There's no longer a computer in it. We still call it the computer room, but it is just full of books.
Oh, wait, are you at like your school?
No, I am home.
You have a private library at your house?
Yes, the book room at my house. It's just chilling back there. We put our initials in the books that we've read so that when all of us have read it, we can donate them. But sometimes we just don't because we're too attached to them.
That's so nice.
Nimona is about the main character, whose name is Nimona, who meets a supervillain and decides she's going to become his sidekick. She's going to become his sidekick, even if he does not want her to become his sidekick. She's just going to do it. So she does. And then the plot starts out really simple because it was originally just a chill little webcomic. But then it kind of expands and you learn about like a whole institution behind the heroes that defend the kingdom, called the Institution of Law Enforcement, and how they might be corrupt, and it just gets more complicated, and it's really good. And also, I've always preferred villains over heroes, so the fact that it focuses mainly on the villains is just amazing as well. So, yeah, I love it. Love this comic so much.
I like how Nimona starts out kind of like kid sister vibes, but then you learn how powerful she is.
Yeah.
That sounds really cool.
Nimona is a shapeshifter, by the way. That's also very important. She can shapeshift.
Oh my gosh.
The book I was going to talk to you about this week is one you knew that Shrek was a children's book before it was a movie.
I did actually know that.
Have you read it?
Really?
No, I have not read it. I have seen all the movies, though. More like I was dragged to all the movies by my friends and my parents, I think. But I've seen all the movies.
Did you like them?
Honestly, I think they're funnier once you get older. But yeah, I like them a whole lot.
I think you would like the book because it is not how the movie is. The movie, Fiona becomes this like traditionally beautiful princess, but that doesn't happen in the book. The book is more like grimy the whole way through.
Yeah, I love it when children's picture books have like a grimier art style and like creepier look about them. I love it when
and Shrek is cool because the author is also the illustrator, William Steig. The book came out like 20 years before the movie, I think.
Oh, so it came out a while ago.
Mm-hmm. Came out in 1990.
Oh. Wait, the movie came out in 2010?
I don't know, is that right?
That is impossible.
Let's see.
Did you know that Toy Story was made in 95?
Yeah, I get kind of freaked out when I realize that Toy Story was made that early.
Okay, Shrek came out in 2001.
That's the first... That was the very first movie using CGI animation technique.
Yeah, it's wild to watch the first Toy Story movie and then watch the newest one and realize how far like the animation has come. Crazy, honestly.
The second, third, and fourth aren't that great. The first one is the best. The first and fourth, especially the first though.
Oh, I think I like the first three Toy Story movies. I've never seen the fourth, honestly. I think it ended perfectly, so I just didn't see it. I just realized, I'm looking at Nimona, and the author is Noelle Stevenson. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with what She-Ra is, or the reboot of She-Ra, but Noelle Stevenson worked on a reboot of She-Ra, which was originally an 80s cartoon, and it's really, really, really good. It's really good. And it's not made by Disney, so they didn't make her censor anything.
Noelle Stevenson also worked on the Lumberjanes, right?
Yeah, she wrote those, yes.
I realized why I thought Shrek, I thought the book preceded the movie by 20 years, but it's just that the book, the copy of the book I was reading is the 20th anniversary of the book being published.
Oh.
So I think it came out like 11 years before the movie.
When was the movie?
2001. I just looked it up.
Knew it.
You were right.
I know my animated movies.
Yeah.
Well, we're just about out of time for today. We hope everyone out there listening has a good week filled with quality reading time. We'll be back next week to talk about more books. Until then, happy reading.
Hudson Valley One rounds up where all the July 4th holiday fireworks will be in the Hudson Valley. On July 4th itself, there is Saugerties 4th of July Parade and Fireworks, with the parade at 1 p.m. and the fireworks display at dusk. There is also Independence Day at Claremont, which starts at noon with demonstrations of historic sewing, paper cutting, and proper soldering in the British Army. But no fireworks this year at the Claremont Historical Site. Wyndham, Cairo, and Tannersville, however, have fireworks on July 4th at Wyndham Mountain Resort, Cairo's Angelo Cana Park, and the Colonial Country Club in Tannersville after dark. Read more about this story at Hudson Valley One.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to my weekly segment covering Tonko Tuesdays. This is Lucas Weber reporting for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Tonko Tuesdays is an event every Tuesday at noon outside U.S. Representative Paul Tonko's office on Dove Street. Join us every Tuesday as we continue to put pressure on Paul Tonko to do what is right for the environment. This week, President of Beyond Plastics and former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Eng spoke to the crowd.
Just a few blocks over here in Sheridan Hollow, for 13 years, we dealt with toxic air emissions from the Answers incinerator on Sheridan Avenue. This was an environmental justice problem before people even used the phrase environmental justice. This is a low-income community, community of color. And for 13 years, the state of New York ran this garbage incinerator, poisoning the entire neighborhood. So imagine a hot day like today, having that incinerator pumping soot and lead and dioxin and other heavy metals, acid gases, into the environment. Unimaginable, right? Well, it took years of organizing to get that incinerator shut down. But we have other incinerators operating all over the state, including in Washington County, right on the Hudson River. What I am so profoundly concerned about is Congressmember Paul Tonko has introduced the so-called Clean Future Act, and shockingly, it includes a provision that provides federal tax credits to promote garbage incineration. What is he thinking? I mean, we know that garbage incinerators not only emit air toxins and create mountains of toxic incinerator ash that need to be landfilled, and they're super expensive. They're also a major emitter of climate change, warming gas, carbon dioxide. So why would Representative Tonko want to provide federal financial support for such a failed technology that will just make the climate crisis even worse? We know that six of the warmest years on record have all occurred since 2014. And we're hot today, and it's even hotter in the Pacific Northwest. This is going to be a cool summer compared to future summers. Future summers are going to be hotter, drier, more prone to wildfires, drought, and heat kills. Many of us are fortunate enough to have good fans or an air conditioner. There are scores of people, our neighbors, our brothers and sisters, who can't afford air conditioning. Many are senior citizens, many have respiratory and heart illness. So why provide federal tax credits to make the climate crisis worse? The flip side of this is the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act, the most sweeping plastic reduction bill ever proposed in the Congress. It would establish a ban on plastic bags, a pause, a three-year pause, named after our own pause, on constructing new petrochemical facilities that make plastic. It would require greater use of recycled material, and it would prohibit the export of plastics to countries that don't have the infrastructure to deal with all of these plastic imports. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is a co-sponsor of the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act. Yay. My congressman, Antonio Delgado, is a co-sponsor of the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act. on cue. Paul Tonko is not a co-sponsor of the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act. And the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act includes a national bottle bill. So this can be a little puzzling. Paul Tonko has spoken out forcefully on the climate change issue, but what has he actually done? And to be honest, this is a little puzzling that he has introduced a bill to financially incentivize garbage burning. And I've called his office, I've spoken to his staff. I'm supposed to have a phone meeting with him next week with some other activists like Doug Bullock and others. But I still couldn't figure this out until yesterday when I read a media article that Paul Tonko went on a trip recently to West Virginia with Republican House member David McKinley, and they visited energy industry sites in the district. They visited coal projects, gas projects. They visited a location where they want to build an ethane cracker facility, which is what is used to produce plastics. This wasn't a nonpartisan trip. This was paid for by the fossil fuel industry. I did not hear an announcement of this trip, but thankfully, due to some really good reporting, we actually have a tweet from Representative McKinley welcoming Representative Tonko to West Virginia as part of the American Congressional Exchange trip. That is funded by fossil fuel companies. Now, I have not seen Paul Tonko. We really have to electrify these trucks. And it's also, it's quieter. Yeah. So this was just reported about a week ago in the media that Congressmember Tonko went and visited fossil fuel sites in West Virginia, including a proposed plastic production facility, trip funded by the fossil fuel industry. He will probably say he was fact-finding. Okay, but go on your own dime. Yeah. Don't go on a trip funded by the fossil fuel industry. And go to Cancer Alley and look at the ethane cracker facilities that are poisoning people of color in Louisiana. Go to Washington County, it's not far up the river, and look at that garbage incinerator that's operating. So something doesn't make sense here. So all of you coming out today is making a difference. We're putting a spotlight on this inconsistency. Sandy has postcards. We have Paul Tonko's phone number. And I think if just 25 or 30 of us call him every day, call him, ask for a meeting, write a letter to the editor, share this information on his fossil fuel funded trip to West Virginia, I've got to hope that he will change. And specifically what we need him to do is take the provision of the Clean Future Act, House Bill 1512, take the provision that finances garbage incinerators out of the bill, and to make up for all the time we have to spend on this, he should co-sponsor the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act, which is House Bill 2238. That would be a nice outcome. So thank you all very, very much.
That was Judith Enck, former EPA Regional Administrator and President of Beyond Plastics. To learn more about Judith and Beyond Plastics, visit beyondplastics.org. To learn more about Tonko Tuesdays and how you can get involved, contact Sandy Steubing at steub@gmail.com. That's it for this week's update on Tonko Tuesdays. Make sure to tune in next Thursday to hear about next week's Tonko Tuesday. Or even better, join us next Tuesday at noon outside Paul Tonko's Albany office and take action to keep our community healthy.
Working really hard for all of us. So I have hugged a lot. lot of people. I'm going to put that out there for the first time. It's great to see all of you in person and not just on a Zoom screen. And the pandemic has demonstrated how important it is for us to really work together to ensure that we don't just build back, but we build back better. And it is important that, you know, that's why it's important that we elected President Biden and Vice President Harris to ensure that we had a rescue plan. Remember how sad we were months and months ago, wondering how on earth we were going to come out of this pandemic. And now we have the funding to do that. And we are going to work together to ensure that we do that strategically and with our unions. So we have many frontline heroes here with us today, including our nurses. Let's thank them. Unions are the backbone of the middle class. My grandfather was a steam fitter. Every day he dressed for work, put on that jumpsuit, and he went out and worked. And on Sunday, he put on his suit and went to church, proudly wearing his union pin on the lapel of that jacket. He loved his union because it provided him with the opportunity to attain the dream of the middle class, which is home ownership. He owned a home. And that really tells the whole story of my family. That ability to become part of the middle class, to earn a living wage, to help to ensure that my father and his brothers had the support that they needed to be successful, allowed me to be where I am today. And so we have someone in Washington who understands that, who is fighting for it, who is here to talk about what we have to do to ensure that we are strengthening our middle class. She is fighting for us. She has done a tremendous job in getting us our rescue plan money. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Probably was tired of me texting her over and over again. Please don't let the states take our money. Please don't let the states take our money. But she was there for us, and it's my distinct honor and privilege to welcome our Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
It's always wonderful to be in Albany. It's always wonderful to be home. I love seeing all of you here. It's been a very rough year and a half, but being able to emerge at this moment and be able to work together and fight for the things we believe in and provide for our families and protect our community is really what it's all about. So I just want to thank everyone for being here. It means a lot, Madam Mayor. Thank you. Today we are here to talk about how we rebuild this economy. And as we focus on rebuilding and recovering, we can't lose sight of the fact that it's the working people who are the true engines of our economy and our communities. The pandemic has really exposed for all of us the divide between working families and the wealthiest individuals in our country. I don't know if you know this, but nearly 500 people became billionaires last year during a pandemic, during an economic collapse. So most of the families in this community struggled over the last year and a half to make ends meet. So we have to address this divide. And one of the best ways to do this is by supporting unions and making sure we are creating good union-paying jobs in our community. As President Biden put it, Wall Street did not build this country. The middle class built this country. And unions built the middle class. The best way to build up our middle class and build back our economy is to strengthen our unions. When people can join unions and bargain collectively, they can start to level the playing field and make our workplaces more equitable and more fair. I think the best way to do that is to pass the PRO Act. Now, the PRO Act is a piece of legislation that is so long overdue, but it works to strengthen our local labor union laws and change some of the landscape for working people. First, it implements safeguards against violations of workers' rights by punishing employers for violations and supporting workers who face retaliation for exercising those rights. Second, it authorizes a private right of action, which makes sure that workers can sue if their rights are being denied or abrogated in any way. Next, it would support workers' rights to join a union, negotiate for better working conditions, have secondary boycotts, collect fair share fees, modernize the union election process, and facilitate initial collective bargaining agreements. And last, it would address the ambiguous wording that allows employers to misclassify their employees as supervisors or as independent contractors. And so this will increase the transparency between workers and management. So we know that if we can build up our unions and build up the ability of working people to have a voice in this economy, it will change everything. I also want to make sure that these infrastructure investments that we're about to make through our Build Back Better plan actually allows for more union-supported jobs. If we do that, we will build our next generation of workers and next generation of union members who are committed to the labor movement and committed to our vision of this economy. So I want to make sure that working people are supported by the soft infrastructure, the human infrastructure that anyone here knows is absolutely essential. We know that if parents can't go to work, if we don't have care for our aging parents, if we don't have care for those who are disabled in our community, we can't go to work, we can't do our job. And so one of the things I've been fighting so hard for is that as we negotiate this infrastructure package, we have both the hard infrastructure, those roads, bridges, sewers, high-speed rail, rural broadband, everything we need to get this economy moving, but also the underpinning of the soft infrastructure, affordable daycare, universal pre-K, a national paid leave plan, more support for our elderly and aging. Those things matter because we are the sandwich generation. I don't know how many people in this room, but I suspect a lot, have both the blessing of young children or aging parents or both. And that is the truth. And so if you don't build the whole infrastructure, you don't build the whole economy. And so that's why I'm here to talk about both the PRO Act and where we should be in terms of our advocacy. I really want to thank all of you for being here. And now I'm going to turn it over to Mark Amation, who's going to speak to us more.
There's a lot of unions in the house here. The Area Labor Federation is very happy to be here, standing with the senator to push for the PRO Act. My family, for generations, have benefited by being in unions. And I'm a member of the United Food and Commercial Workers, and I benefit my family right now by being in unions. This morning, I was supposed to be on 230 Green Street down in the south end of Albany, where we are distributing the coalition that we helped put together with Catholic Charities and the Regional Food Bank and others. We're distributing 28 tons of food to families that are desperate for food. Our economy has recovered a little bit. People are working. The unemployment around here is lower than the national average. But rents, mortgages, groceries, gasoline, medical, everything is going sky high. An apartment that used to be $600 4 years ago is now $1,200, and the wages did not keep up. If we pass the PRO Act and we get everyone that wants to be in a union in a union, poverty will decline, and we won't have to do these damn food distributions like we've done. To me, it seems like a matter of life and death, because if you do not have a healthy life where you have the human rights of housing, food, education, and health care.